Yeah, hello. Welcome back to Help Me Find Good Coffee. Today, as you can see, we do an episode in English. And that will especially make our English friends and family happy, because they would like to follow us, but they don't understand a word. So I'm today happy that I can be in Cricklewood Coffee Roasters place, and James agreed to give an interview to us, yeah, to me, which I'm happy about. Thank you, James.
Pleasure, Omar.
Yeah, and probably we start from that. You still tell us your story. How did it all start? Did you learn it, or was it already, or did you do another business before?
I this is my second career. I used to work in digital media, building websites and apps for MTV for about 15 years. And then this is my second career. And I started it about 5 years ago. And I wasn't a coffee roaster to start with. I just had a coffee van. And I taught myself by YouTube and Googling, basically. And the only reason why I started roasting was because I wasn't selling enough coffee at my van, at the station that I had it at. So it's all been a bit random, really. And now I've got a shop, so it's going okay.
It's developing, yeah.
Yeah, gradually.
So was it a passion thing, or was it like to open up a coffee van?
I wouldn't say it was my dream to be a coffee roaster, but I have always liked coffee. I've always drunk it, and I was looking for something to do that I could get into and understand and like enough to make a business out of it. And coffee happened to be the thing. It was either that or Yorkshire puddings.
All right.
Or a chef, or I've always liked cooking, I've always liked food, I've always liked to cook.
So it was open doors, yeah? It developed fine, so...
Yeah, and I think coffee roasting is kind of like cooking, you know, it is cooking in some respects. So, I've always enjoyed doing something like that. So rather than sit by a computer and fiddle with a mouse and draw things on the screen, I thought, you know, doing something that means you can interact with people as well. You know, it's not just emailing people all the time. It's that's true. Interaction, which I think is really important for everyone, actually, to do a little bit of that.
And, I mean, one good thing is the investment is not as huge as other businesses would be, no? I mean, I don't know how you started.
I think when I first started, there weren't many I started on a little tiny 250-gram... Cafe Genie roaster, which is like a little Korean-made roaster. But there's tons of little tiny roasters out there now that you can get for home roasting. I mean, I wouldn't know where to start with the list, to be honest. Literally, especially since COVID, and it seems like there's more and more coming out. I think it's really, really easy to get into it now. You can buy small amounts of green beans from a lot of coffee roasters.
True.
Whereas 5-6 years ago you couldn't. So yeah, it's changing a lot. So I think it will, you know, there might be a day where people are roasting more at home than they are, you know, buying coffee from people like me. But at the moment, people are still buying from roasters, so yeah, that's good for me. But
I mean, it's still an art, no? Because you have to know what you do. I mean, once you figure it out, sometimes if you're happy with the result, but once you get different beans or whatever, then the whole thing starts again from the beginning. And probably it was easier when you had a small machine, because you sometimes you mess up. Yeah, you take them out too early or too late or whatever. You have to find.
Yeah, no, there is a certain amount of that, and when you change machines, there is a learning curve on every new machine, even though you know people do use, you know, there is software that you use to track temperature and roast time, etc., etc. I don't think there's anything that really can substitute for practice and learning on the job and feeling. You know, and smelling and actually tasting the coffee.
I figured out that roasters, they don't want to be bored by their own business. They want to find out. They want to go to the limits. Yeah, to the limits of not roasting them too dark. Yeah, or going very dark. Yeah, to find out. Different flavors.
Yeah, I mean, there is that. I think I've been really lucky in that I've had the same Brazilian coffee for like since I've started roasting. I've got a really good relationship with the importers and the farmers that I use for that, and I think that's really important to have like at least one coffee that you kind of really know really well, and you know how it obviously it changes season by season, and that's another thing that.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of consumers don't realise the seasonality of coffee, and even if you get the same coffee from the same farm every year, it's slightly different, like any kind of food product, really. So, it can change, the taste of it can change, and the way that you roast it slightly can change. But there's a format to most, like any cooking, there's a format to it that you follow and you know,
yeah. Anyway, if people know they buy coffee from you, they have the. I mean, I don't know how many different kinds do you sell?
Yeah, I mean, I only really keep now that I've got bigger. I've got a 15-kilogram roaster now, so I tend to not. I probably will hopefully get a smaller roaster so I can do smaller batches. But I tend to just have like my main Brazilian for wholesale and for like. You know, espresso in the shop, and then I might have two or three other coffees and a decaf that I sell direct to customers. I've paused my coffee subscription at the moment, so I'm looking at ways maybe where I'll get a different coffee every month for people. But some people actually I've found want consistency with their coffee, and they actually want
they
the same.
That, yeah?
They mean, want the same coffee at home every. They want that same feeling. You know, the number of people that come into my shop saying that want to replicate a coffee they had in the mountains in Italy or somewhere like that is quite funny. When people come in, they want to, and I said, well, you're probably not going to get it here because I'm not in Italy and I'm not in the mountains, and it's probably not a dark roast like they had there and.
It's
interesting how people, especially with coffee, they seem to always be quite particular about what they want.
Yeah, and especially we figured out that we ourselves, we didn't know much about coffee, and other people don't either, yeah? So, because we are in the south of Germany, so Italy is very close, and every time we cross the border into Italy, and drink a coffee there, that's the best coffee ever. Yeah. So it doesn't matter, yeah? And what you said is probably right. It's the atmosphere also, yeah? It's the Italian flair and it's all that, yeah? But what we figured out is that those Italian bar mixtures are pretty safe, yeah? And me and my friend Yusha, who does that podcast with me, usually we started telling ourselves, okay, we are a podcast and we say we look for the best coffee. We have to to look into others. We have to go out of our safe zone to figure out what's out there in this big world of coffee. Yeah,
it's funny how people always after the best coffee, because I did read, I think when I first started, I can't remember, it might have been a what I know about running a coffee shop. Is it Colin Harmon in Ireland? And he said, mate, your worst coffee in the morning. Make your worst cup of coffee that you can make.
All right.
Because if your worst cup of coffee is okay, then
you
know, you're going to... Obviously, your best cup of coffee is going to be amazing.
But, I heard about I don't know, was it in Korea or in Japan or somewhere, some weird guy who makes his own coffee. He's making coffee in the morning, putting his machine on and everything. Yeah. And if he doesn't feel like it's the perfect coffee, he doesn't open his shop.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, you know, I could say, you know, this morning, I'm not a barista. I've never been a trained barista. I've never worked in a coffee shop. You know, I own a coffee business for 5 years, and it's a bit silly, really. I mean, I should have worked somewhere for at least a few months before I opened a place myself, but I didn't. And I mean, I do believe I can make a good cup of coffee now. But this morning, it took me like a good 15, 20 minutes to dial in a coffee that 2 days ago was
perfectly.
Like really easy. So, yeah, who knows why that is the case. Maybe I was just a bit more sleepy. Maybe my taste buds haven't woken up this morning.
But apparently, even through the day, you have to sometimes adjust,
I've heard those stories. You know what? I've heard ridiculous stories of if someone opens the door for too long, right? Come on. If the air temperature, if someone farts, then change dial. Yeah,
yes, it's taste the atmosphere.
I mean, yeah, I've never used a pump. Well, I have used a pump espresso machine, but I use a lever machine in my shop, and I feel like that helps you with your espresso making, definitely, because you can kind of give it a little jiggle here and there. Well, you know, there are some methods, you know, with the lever machine where you can help it extract better.
And I don't know most of your customers. I don't know. I didn't spend that much time in your shop, but a lot of them take their coffee with milk anyway, no? I mean, and that is changing the whole thing. It's more safe than if someone wants an espresso, because the espresso is the thing where it shows. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's that whole thing of when an Italian person walks in and asks for an espresso.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh, here we go, kind of thing. And I had an Italian guy come in and tell me how to make a drink the other day. We didn't have an argument, but we had a heated discussion about coffee.
Yeah.
And he came back and he brought his dad, actually. And his dad really liked the espresso, and they've come back again since. It's definitely easier with milk. But then milk sometimes, you know, especially non-dairy maybe, has its issues, I think, and changes the taste. I think I'm always after that kind of like creamy, chocolatey taste. I don't really like serving fruity kind of milky drinks, to be honest. Like, that's my own preference.
This is very hard to me. I think it's very hard to if you have daily customers coming in, or sometimes work stop. Some people that just want a coffee. You should have a safe coffee.
And I've only got one grind. One grinder for the main machine at the moment. So maybe I'm still new to opening a shop. You know, this is. I'm still only like a few months into opening a shop, but I've been running this business.
Otherwise, it gets also very hard to run it, because then if someone wants an infusion or wants a brew, a special kind of brew, I mean, you see, you need time, and then you would probably need another person.
I mean, I'm running all by myself at the moment. Yeah. I do have someone help pack on all the online orders, but it's, you know, you get into that issue when you're doing a pour over for someone and then you've got a queue of customers. It is a bit of a problem. But I mean, espresso, you know, and steaming milk takes a while, you know. It's not a quick thing. So
it's not pressing a button.
Not yet. But I mean, I do believe some of those, you know, some of those companies that use some bean to cup machines, they're actually pretty good, you know. They're not, I'm not, I'm not so like, you must use an espresso machine. I think a couple of my wholesale customers have some decent bean to cup machines, and some of the coffee that comes out of them is pretty reasonable.
At our company where I work, we have those machines in a pretty good condition, but when we have an Italian guy who's trying to sell us now a coffee to our company, and it would be a lot. And he told us, and what is probably true, he said those machines, because they have so much plastic inside, they have different issues, some issues they can't change. So the heat, for example, they try to compensate with pressure. Obviously, all those things have to do with taste. Yeah. So he said, forget it. Yeah. You can't get the same result. No. You can have. No, you can't. Obviously, you can have a good coffee.
No, you won't get. Yeah.
But you won't get the same thing. So when we said, oh, shouldn't we buy maybe the better espresso from you for that machine? He said, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like wasting the good coffee on a machine that can't get the flavors out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, heat is always important in roasting and in preparing coffee.
Yeah.
Getting everything nicely warmed up is, like any cooking, you know, you don't cook with a cold pan. Most people don't.
Yeah.
No, they get the pan nice and hot, and it's the same with an espresso machine and a coffee roaster. You need to get everything really nice and hot and at the right temperature before you start cooking anything. Apart from your milk jug, maybe.
So and so now in the future, you said you would be interested in making maybe buying another roaster, a smaller roaster too, so that you can get some different flavored.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, I don't really buy the really high end kind of coffees at the moment.
Yeah.
Because they're too expensive for me as a smaller roaster to buy, and I don't really have the customers that. But you know, I did read somewhere from a business point of view, if you have a really really expensive coffee, then people are more likely to buy your other coffees from a psychological point of view. That's why, you know, a lot of online businesses have got really high priced items, and so just purely from that point of view, business sense, it seems like a good idea to have, you know, some of these coffees. But then I've experienced and tasted some of these amazing coffees, and they're not as amazing as you think they are.
We had the same thing. I told you maybe about it, that in the process of trying out good coffees, people send us coffees which are really quite expensive, and you think, oh, that must be the thing, and they sometimes got on board and whatever, and then you taste them and you think, is something wrong with myself that I don't get it, or what is it? But probably it is that it's not a safe zone coffee, it's a special coffee. It brings out flavors that a usual bar espresso mixture wouldn't give you. And that makes them special. I told you maybe that we went to that Frankfurt coffee festival. And we were disappointed in a way. We would have loved to have one Italian stand with normal coffee. Because all those hipsters with their flavors and maracuja flavor and papaya flavor and whatever. Sometimes I couldn't even finish my espresso they offered for free, because it was just too fruity, too sour, too whatever.
I know.
Just didn't like it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
well, you like what you like at the end of the day. And I think sometimes with trends and especially in the coffee industry, and I guess in the wine industry and loads of similar industries along those lines, you're promoted to like a certain type of coffee. And, you know,
well, obviously you want to be different.
This year compared to last year, for example?
Yeah.
Like a Colombian geisha or whatever.
Or Christmas coffee.
I mean, everyone's got to do a Christmas blend, right? I'm going to do one.
Yeah.
A festive blend, not Christmas. Festive.
What's that going to be like?
I think it's probably Brazilian Yunnan coffee in there, some chocolatey raisin flavours maybe, a bit like Christmas pudding.
All right. You're going out of your safe zone.
Yeah.
Is it ready already? Is it?
Not yet, no, maybe this week.
All right.
What are we now, the end of November, so... But hopefully by the start of December, we'll have it all bagged up and ready to go, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, this business seems to work at the moment. I mean, I at least the Google reviews are good, no?
Yeah.
I mean, this is something, no? I mean...
I mean, it's always scary,
if it's
isn't
not,
it,
If it's yeah. not only friends.
No, I haven't. I think I left it myself a Google review when I first started. Most people are actually customers, but I mean, it's really important, isn't it? Things like Google reviews, and actually, it's one thing I haven't really, although I have an Instagram and other social media platforms, I've not really gone to town on it, and I am going to have to start looking more at doing things like that, because it is actually how people find
it is a tool now. It is a tool.
Yeah, I mean, now that sort of COVID is sort of passed a little bit and people are going out and about, it's you know, people are going out finding new places and showing them off.
Yeah, like people like myself. I mean, I just put in roastery and figured out what's around me, not too far to drive.
Yeah.
And if it would have had 2 out of 5, then I would thought, is that really worth going for me?
No, definitely.
It's a natural...
I think it's very important. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do. Hopefully no one on your podcast leaves me a bad review. But I don't know what I'd do if I had a bad review, you know?
Yeah.
How you combat that?
Yeah, you can.
I've read loads of...
But it's very
loads
hard,
of restaurant... you know, I'm not on TripAdvisor or anything like that, but I've read loads of... restaurateurs that have had lots of problems when people have left them bad reviews.
Yeah, they're just in a mood, and it's quite, it gives the customer a huge power over you, and even if they're in the right or wrong or whatever, it doesn't matter, they can write whatever they want.
I think it's a very interesting point though, with Google reviews and things like that, that if a customer comes in, I think that's really, really important to give good customer service.
Yeah.
Because even if your product, you feel like that day your coffee isn't tasting as good as it did the day before, and it's really, really hard to get consistency, no matter what people say and whatever equipment they use, it's still really difficult to get consistency constantly. You know, it is hard work, but, you know, all you can do is try, and if you come across to people as a person that is trying your best, then I think, I hope, even if your product's not the best they've ever had, that they will not leave you a bad review.
I had the same thing.
You know?
I had I'm experiencing now in my Airbnb, like, it's not perfect for what I put money in it, but the people are too nice to give me a chance to even write a bad review, you see? Because they are just nice people. Yeah?
And they left you some free biscuits or something.
It's just, you see, and that's exactly it. Yeah, if you come in and the experience itself was a nice experience and the coffee, well, maybe didn't taste 100%, then you wouldn't... What kind of dickhead would you be to give a bad review, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, yeah? But obviously, if you're badly treated and whatever, then you think like, what? Why?
I mean, that's what I say. Like customer service, that would be my main thing about starting a new business, especially actually on the e-commerce side. Like when COVID hit and it went crazy online, the customer service side was huge amount of time taken up. Like I have the utmost respect for people that do that as a you know, a full-time job for huge companies, because it's a very, very difficult thing to do.
Like, especially I don't know how many people come into your shop, but if you see restaurants or whatever, sometimes there are hundreds on a day, you see?
Yeah.
So the chance of maybe messing up with one or two. Yeah, it can happen. I mean, you're a human being. Yeah, something can go wrong in the kitchen, whatever. Yeah, it can happen. Yeah,
I mean, and it's really easy. Yeah. It's really easy for a shop. You know, when you're doing everything yourself, and you know, someone walks into your shop and says, "Oh, I'm going to try your coffee and see if it's any good."
Yeah.
You know, basically, like I'm going to be the judge of you. No, but you do. You get people coming all the time saying, and then you're like, oh. Okay, all right.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
And then they order it, and they order a mocha with like coconut milk and four sugars or something.
Yeah, and then you think, all right, okay.
But yeah, it's it's all a learning curve, and I think that's a great thing about any kind of business, owning it yourself, especially like the coffee. You're always learning and. No day is ever the same, and like just being able to like fix coffee roasters and, you know, understand all the elements that go along with it, and being able to fix a lever, a coffee machine, you know, all those kind of things that you learn gradually over the years that you run your own business, I think are really important sort of skills.
True. Yeah, I mean, you learn every day, and then probably, as you said, you try out different things. You get to know what your customers like, what they dislike, and then you told me the other day an interesting story about your label. No,
oh, my logo. Oh, logo. Logo, yeah. One of the most famous typographers of the last kind of like 50, 60 years, whatever. His name's Eric Spiekermann, and he actually did the German Autobahn, Deutsche Bahn branding. And because I used to
work. Isn't that one that Kraftwerk uses on their
DB? So, and actually they have a main office site in Cricklewood.
All right.
Funny enough, but just from tweeting it, it turned out that his son had lived in Cricklewood, and also his brother had a little coffee business that he did the branding for once.
Yeah.
And when he was over in England, I swapped a couple of bags of coffee, and he did. My logo for me, and I think he mainly lives in Berlin, it was pretty surreal really, because he's, you know, to get his time and the effort, you know, it's amazing.
And I mean, someone might think, what is their big what kind of logo? It's not that special, yeah. But if you know what type.
His own typeface that he designed himself.
What kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I think what's more amazing is the fact that it's someone I don't even know that's helped me, you know, and they've done a major part of my business, which is my logo, which I can stand by and I can tell you the story about it, and it adds to the... my business, and how my business is going to grow. And I think through the time of since I've had my business, I've gone from roasting in my kitchen to one of my customers, my van customers, giving me some free warehouse space to roast in and buy, so I could buy a bigger machine and then sort of scale up, and all these people that have
Those are the open doors, no?
Yeah, I mean, they're people that I didn't really know, and I wouldn't have got this shop if I hadn't met one of the guys that worked for the development company at the station.
All right.
So although you get loads of help from friends and family, it is really amazing that people that you don't even know, help you.
Yeah. But that's obviously, you need that also, yeah? If you open up something like that, if you have... develop an idea to open up something like that, if you would always end up at closed doors or difficulties, that wouldn't really encourage you, yeah? But if people encourage you by giving you help and
yeah, I think you know, perseverance is a massive thing to when you start a business. I think most businesses here in the UK don't last more than a few years, you know, small businesses, even though they pay the most amount of tax in the country, they don't last very long because it's very difficult.
It's a lot of development, yeah.
Yeah.
Beside the chains, obviously, yeah, but...
Yeah, but I think perseverance is... I think when things aren't going very well, if you persevere, then something might happen the next day that changes your luck completely. And,
true.
You know, someone might buy your coffee, like a famous person online that just gives you a little lift.
Yeah.
Oh, that person bought, you know, like a
Cricklewood coffee.
You know, so that's happened a few times to, you know, that you know, you feel really down when you're doing your own business and suddenly you get a big, you know, although it is about earning money and paying the rent and et cetera, et cetera, you know, to be able to do that, you need to persevere and go through the bad bits to sort of try and out the other side, because giving up isn't an option, is it?
Yeah, and I mean, we have to at the end of the day, it is a business, yeah, because you have a family to provide, yeah, and that's how it is, yeah. It's not only the passion for coffee, yeah. I mean, the passion for coffee is a base of being a good roaster, probably, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the day, money has to come in, yeah.
Yeah.
Did after COVID, did those online businesses stay the way they were, or were those people that usually would come into your shop and buy them directly? Did it increase?
Bit both. I mean, I don't send coffee out to Europe anymore, like because of Brexit. But I, you know, I do send coffee all around the UK, and I had quite a few hundred subscription customers, but I've just stopped my subscription service and I'm going to relaunch it because I'm rethinking about how it works. But I'm trying as much as possible to get people into the shop. I think I live in quite a highly populated part of London, and I think there's enough people that live around here that like good, great tasting coffee and want to come and pick it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm running a service soon where people can just bring in a container and fill up a container and they can just get 100 grams of any type of coffee they want, rather than, you know, bagging it up and spending all that time bagging and labelling, and then they can just come in with a container and pick it up for the day or, you know, the weekend or whatever.
But on the other hand, if you have consistent customers, then the amount of coffee you can buy, because you know, well, I will sell a couple of 100 kilos a month or whatever, then
I've worked out that I do only need to sell a certain amount every month to be okay, you know, and to grow. So if I can do that locally and not have to send it out in the post.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people want to grow online businesses, and they don't want any limit to them. But you know, as soon as you start growing, you have to employ someone else to pack the coffee, and then you have to grow more and grow more and grow more. So being able to optimize your growth level, I think, unless you're really greedy, and you want to take over the world. But I don't want to be the next, you know.
Why not? Yeah.
I have massive ambition, but as a small roaster, I mean, I want to produce other products as well as, you know, coffee-based products, you know, like a coffee liqueur or like, you know, something else based around coffee. I mean, I think there's, I live in a part of London that doesn't really, is in between quite a lot of affluent areas, but it's not affluent itself. So I think there's a massive opportunity there to grow the brand and grow the area brand and the, you know.
What about coffee shops or like bakeries or whatever is businesses around here? Wouldn't that be, because I mean you have the Cricklewood in your logo, and in your name, and that is something that would fit to local businesses?
To be honest, the Made in Cricklewood brand might come about at some point.
Yeah.
So it's not just coffee products, but other products. We're making some ceramic products for, and we have done for, because my wife's a ceramicist, so she's made some mugs and tumblers and she's making some candle stuff for Christmas. So, and I stock a local honey as well now. So I think there's enough happening, like you said, like locally, to hopefully kind of build on those products and do other stuff as well as coffee.
Do you still do your stand?
No, I sold that van.
Because I know a roaster in Germany. We interviewed, and he does the same. He has a local shop. He has a roastery, and he does that.
Yeah.
I mean, having a van obviously puts your name around because you have a lot of people coming in, and he sells out of his. Yeah. I mean, it is advertisement, free advertisement in a way.
I mean, I had that van. I mean, the trouble with coffee vans is they take a lot of effort to do, and they're not as simple as just, you know, getting in it and driving and getting out and then here I am. It's like a couple of hours end and cleaning it and servicing it and all that, those kind of things, and unless you've got like the space and area to do it. The little Italian van that I had, it's great, looks great, fantastic.
Yeah.
Completely impractical as a coffee van, you know. All it's right. not really practical. Okay. So
would be another investment.
Yeah, I mean, I have been asked, and it's definitely possible that I would do like a farmer's market or a stand, and I got asked to do a local one here that just started up in Wilston Green, but I couldn't do it because I was opening the shop. But maybe when I've got... If there's a few local people that are interested in like helping me spread the brand locally, then I'm quite happy to give
someone an
opportunity to open one for me, and they can take the proceeds, whatever, and use my brand to you know do it. But so that's definitely something. There's a new station opening near here, which would be great to get a little, you know, kiosk or something on there. It's definitely something. Once I've settled into this shop, I'll definitely look at doing that at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think if people would see this thing all over the place, it's here, somewhere where it pops up, your name, your brand, in the neighborhood, the more it could develop, that also people are interested to coming in the shop. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I read something interesting because this is something we talk about a lot on our podcast, is about that fair trade thing, where we discussed this is a business by itself that people want nowadays. They want fair trade because they want to be good. Yeah, everybody wants to be a good customer. Yeah? So he wants to buy the good coffee. So he looks for that label. Fair trade.
Isn't it B Corp the new one? A B Corp.
I don't know.
The new one is to be a B Corp.
Yeah. But it's a business by itself.
Absolutely.
Obviously,
yeah.
If you look into it, they do a job of looking into fair treatment and all those things, yeah. But on the other hand, as I read on your website, if I had to correct me if I'm wrong, but you said like the direct trade that you try to get your coffee from is your way of fair trade. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I should really take direct trade off my website now, because I think it's direct trade is misleading in the term of like I do not directly trade with the, well, I do actually with the Brazilian farmers, but I trade directly with small importers that are transparent about where they get the coffee from, and I think one of the companies I get my African coffee from, they use it a lot, and I think it's becoming more and more popular, is transparency with your product and where you get everything from, and making sure everyone can find out, you know, who you've bought it from and how it's got there. I know some people go to the the degree of listing all the prices for everything.
They do.
I don't know why, because we don't expect supermarkets or anyone to do that for every single product. Yeah. I mean, would that change our? Why should a small business?
That's a strange thing.
Yeah, why coffee? Yeah. I mean, you don't have.
Yeah, coffee is like a product where they. Where they do that.
Yeah.
And I know another.
Wait, do they do it with wine? I don't know.
No, I don't.
I don't think so. But so. I mean,
where coffee comes from those countries where you think, oh, it might ruin the rainforest if the people are treated bad, whatever. And obviously we want to be the good ones, but on the other hand we look for those products. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So the fair trade label. What do you think? What's your thoughts about those?
I mean, I think it's all about marketing, isn't it? I think we just need to, I personally just feel like people should pay an interest in where their products come from, whether it's food or jumpers or trainers or whatever. I mean,
and it's,
do people care if their trainers are fair trade?
No.
I mean, no, so why should they care if their coffee is or their food is? I mean,
They want to make a point really somewhere.
I mean, it's proven that it probably sells stuff more easily to, or makes people buy products. I think that the whole thing about transparency is really important in life and in general, but I also, in the products that you sell and buy, but then we're in a world where marketing is like the main driver for everything.
True. Yeah.
You know.
And there are some pretty bad coffees, and I heard this one that, for example, coffees that are not good quality, they buy themselves into that fair trade and bio market, get rid of those beans they cannot sell on the normal market.
Yeah.
So they buy the label of bio and fair trade for it.
Yeah.
To get rid of bad beans even. And then the customer in the shop, if he can choose between a good coffee and a bio coffee, then he goes for the bio coffee or fair trade coffee because his conscience telling him, oh, I want to be a good customer. Yeah. So.
Well, that's exactly what it is, isn't it? It's people making. They've probably made bad decisions about other things they've bought. So, but buying something that has fair trade on makes them feel better about themselves.
Yeah.
Really, and that's all it is. Isn't
yeah.
It's the same with the B Corp. Or, I mean, I do use the word direct trade on my website. I probably shouldn't anymore. I think I should change it to being transparent and open to any questions about my products. But I mean, you know, I think it's packaging, for example, like asking, you know, people might say biodegradable or recyclable or whatever, compostable, whatever it is. But
if it
what's the chances it's all come from China? 99.9% chance it's all come from China, made in a factory where people were treated badly, probably. Yeah. I mean, I don't know for a fact, but I could pretty much guarantee that that is the case. So why people aren't kicking off more about the packaging of, especially people always want the small business owners to invest more in their packaging. I mean, but the supermarkets over in the UK, the packaging they use is terrible.
They have the
we package fruit. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous.
You come from Aldi and you expect the Cricket coffee roaster to be perfect in every.
So it's interesting how people expect things from small businesses, but I realised that I can do little things to help, which is, you know, giving people a refill service so that they can make that decision and At the end of the day, it helps me as well. It helps me. I don't have to buy all the packaging.
I mean, there's a lot of hypocrisy. We know it. Yeah. It's the same with the football thing now. Everybody's discounting or whatever. Yeah? And you're right. Yeah, you can't. Especially, we figured out when we talked about this. Oh, it needs a certain kind of richness also to be good in every sense. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah?
Yeah.
If you want to buy good products produced by not by children but by people who earn a decent wage and all that, I mean, you have to have the financial needs. You have to have the money for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, if you have to eat and you only have a certain amount of money per month, then you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's interesting with the kind of at the moment here in the UK, the price of everything's going up. You know, lots at the moment. And
same
in
Germany. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's terribly scary for a lot of people, but then I also think it's a good thing in some respects because it makes people look at what they're eating, what they're buying, and whether they need it or not.
Yeah.
Like, do you need to buy all this stuff and do you need to buy all this food, you know, and waste it? Like, we waste so much food.
Yeah.
And probably waste a lot of, you know, coffee, you know. I waste coffee beans and, you know, coffee every day because I'm either dialing in or I'm doing something wasteful.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting. I mean, if the price of everything's going up, I don't think it's bad. It's making me look at what I'm consuming and thinking, you know, actually, I have less of that, and it's not really
If it does that, look at the COVID time where people said, oh, let's look. What was maybe a good lesson in it? Yeah. What could we learn from it? Yeah. What could we take from it? And look at now. Yeah.
Yeah.
We forgot about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Very quickly.
Well, people consumed, you know, things like coffee and chocolate and stuff like that. We were selling tons of it, weren't we, online? Because people were consuming loads of nice stuff at home because they had, you know, people that had jobs. They had loads of it, cash to spend on stuff.
Yeah.
And they were spending it because they weren't using it for the rail fares or the, you know, whatever else. So, or their lunches at work. So they were spending on other stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, we it's amazing how quickly we can forget about the end of the world, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we know, we can see, okay, our lifetime will end, okay. I think until then, until I die, it will still stand.
Well, that's only one thing for certain, isn't it? That we will, will end. So it's, I think it's a, yeah, that is, that. I mean, I don't want to get too...
Comment.
Yeah, not talking about coffee now, but it's.
Yeah.
But I think consuming nice things and in small amounts is not a bad thing. And, you know, it's like having a 12-ounce latte. I don't see the point in it. I'm not into milk and coffee drinks, but what is the point in having a massive 12-ounce drink?
Yeah.
You know, loads of milk and...
Yeah, flavours.
I've just served a person that, haven't I?
Yeah.
Like a cappuccino with a lot of milk.
Yeah.
And hardly any coffee in it. A one-shot 12-ounce...
Yeah.
Cappuccino.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
She's happy. She wanted it hot. Because she was probably cold.
Yeah, I know.
She wanted a hot drink.
I don't actually think I did it extra hot. I think she asked for it extra hot, didn't she?
Yeah,
but yeah, that's...
You forgot about
that. I forgot about that, unfortunately. I think a lot of people do when they get asked to. But yeah, it's... I mean, she'll probably never come back here again, but, you know, as long as she doesn't leave a bad Google review.
Yeah.
It's... Why do people need to consume that much? I mean, that's what we've inherited from, like, other culture. I guess the American kind of coffee culture is giving us the 12-ounce, 16-ounce cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I don't do 16 ounce. I do a 12 ounce cup. I don't really want to do one.
Yeah.
Most specialist coffee places wouldn't.
Yeah.
But then I sit in this weird, I sit in between, I think, specialist coffee and like cost. I have a lot of customers that are kind of in between.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interesting, you know.
Well, if they become regular people that you know, become to know, then you can start telling them maybe, oh, why don't you try out something different today, for example. Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think some people don't realize what they're consuming either. You know, they don't realize that they're like.
Well, maybe one last thing. I wanted to your machine. What kind of machine you're working with, and how did you choose? I mean, you had at one point to choose a grinder. I mean, we all know how important a good grinder is. Yeah.
I think they chose me, to be honest.
Yeah. All right.
I think I bought my coffee van, my Piaggio Appi coffee van.
Yeah.
From an Italian guy. That had it at a station. I bought it off him, and that machine was inside it. So when I sold my van during COVID, I took it out and I thought I'll just have it in the shop. It's the only machine I've ever used, so that's how I decided. It's just
was decided for you.
Espresso machines are incredibly expensive, and I looked at renting one I couldn't buy one to move into the shop.
Yeah.
A new one. And I like the look of it, and I like the fact it's a bit battered and it's got a few dents from where I've dropped it and various other things.
Well,
because I used to have to pick it up myself out in the back. It's about 70 kilos or whatever, 80 kilos. I used to have to pick it out and out the back of the van myself and clean the van out, and I don't know. It's I don't think I'll ever get rid of it now. It's sort of part of the history of my business.
Became part of you.
I think so. Yeah, I think. And the grinder, it's just an old like Mazda grinder. I will get a new grinder. That's what I will do.
All right.
I've got a few people coming in to talk about grinders soon. So yeah, I think grinders are important. I've got some.
That was for me when I looked into having a machine, then I found out they're quite expensive. Yeah, even if you want an have an ECM. I don't know if you know that one at home.
Yeah, maybe
and,
good. Yeah,
and it was over €1,000. So
yeah,
and then I thought, okay, I need the machine. But then they also figured out I need a good grinder too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have an Astoria machine there. Yeah. So. Yeah, it looks nice, and it's also how you call it? I don't know the name in English. Was the
lever?
The lever, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's not. It's from like the 1980s, I think, maybe.
Did you had to repair it?
I've had to repair it myself. Last time it got serviced, I didn't do that myself, but I have repaired it myself in the past. Yeah.
Are there people in the UK who do that? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's loads of machine repairers that can do it. Yeah. They're not. There's quite a few espresso engineers around North London that can do it. But yeah, I have repaired it myself. Yeah.
Which is possible with those old machines.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, anything's possible on YouTube. I think there's a guy.
Yeah.
I found one video of a guy that stripped down one of these and.
There's something nice about YouTube videos, no? I repaired my washing machine with a Russian guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he helped me a lot. Yeah. So.
I did the same thing with my washing machine and. Then I found out another bit was broken, so I had to get a new washing machine. But it is really, really useful. I mean, it's great as well because you know if you can watch someone else do it, that it's possible for you to do it if you've got a bit of patience. So,
true. Yeah, sometimes you have a certain fear yeah, because you never did it before, yeah.
Yeah.
But once you do it, it's a few screws and then it opens up and then it's one part, and if it's not that part, it could be the other one. So sometimes it's a few cent or a few euro or pound, and you don't need a new machine,
Completely. But I mean, one day I will get a new machine, but I, you know, maybe someone like Lamazocco or someone like that who's listening to this podcast will give me a free machine. That'd be great.
That would be great.
I'll be happy to.
I'm waiting for a sponsor myself.
Yeah, okay.
I want to live on a boat in the Caribbean and live from my podcast.
Yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. Well, James, thanks for your time. I took already 1 hour of your precious time. Yeah.
No, that's a pleasure. Thanks for coming in.
I hope my English friends and listeners would check you out and get some coffee from you and check out his website. It's cricklewoodcoffeeroasters.com or .uk
.co actually, just .co.
.co.
As in .columbia, .co.
All right.
I don't know. I think originally I was going to call it the Cricklewood Coffee Company.
Yeah.
But then I called it Cricklewood Coffee Roasters.
You probably sell the beans, and also they can buy it also already grinded, no?
Yeah, you can online. Yeah, you can ask for it to be ground online, or you can come into the shop. We're in Northwest London, but if you just Google Cricklewood Coffee, we should come up.
I found it.
So yeah, come down and have a drink, or if you don't live in London, then.
Taste. What is that? Great Taste Award.
Great Taste Award. So I won a couple of Great Taste Awards. Awards that the Guild of Fine Foods give out. I mean, you do have to pay to enter them.
Yeah.
But they give out a limited number every year. I think it's a great thing to do. I'm not sure if I'll enter again, but I think at the point where I won the first one, I was about to give up. So it was actually a really good thing because it kept me going.
Yeah. One of those signs.
Yeah, and I think I literally didn't have any money. I entered it. I literally did not have any money to spend to enter it.
All right.
So I found it 80 quid or whatever it was. I had no money at the time, and I was really struggling to, you know, I thought I wouldn't be able to build a business, and I think I'd only been roasting a couple of months when I entered it, and I wasn't selling many cups of coffee at the van, so I was kind of getting ready to give up already, and then I won that, and it spurred me on, and then I think the following year I won 2 stars, which they can give you up to 3 stars. 2 stars is.
Do they come in and make it?
No, you send it off. You send it off, and then it gets judged. Right. Blind judged, tasted. So that they only
but
give
that's
out.
That's pretty fair. That means pay for being awarded.
Which
is a good point.
Yeah,
that gives you credit. No,
it's good
for your work
it's good, and I think. Yeah, it's good that they blind taste test it, and it's good that, you know, things like that can give small businesses motivation to carry on and to, but it's similar to the fair trade stamp that we were talking about. You know, a lot of people put the Great Taste sticker on their products to sell it, help sell it.
Yeah.
But then you end up with, you know, a lot of products with the sticker on. So, you know... I think building a loyal customer base has a lot more value than kind of promoting.
Yeah, but it functions. I mean, we function like that.
Yeah.
We function like that. If I look on the website and I see an
award,
it could be.
Yeah.
We could have made that out that this award exists.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a really difficult one for a business, isn't it, to work because. You read all these things about how you should build a website and do it online, and how you need this trigger and this trigger and that trigger.
I mean, it was your business anyway, yes?
Yeah, and it's true. You do need all those kind of triggers to make people purchase something.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah.
It's absolutely right. You need all those kind
of... And people are quick, you see. It's a second, sometimes splits of seconds that you see something that triggers you. And
they say the best thing that someone can do if they own their own is to write a book about or write something about what they, you know, to help sell... Because as soon as you're an author, you become an authority on a subject.
So when will your book come
out? And you think
about
all the big coffee people that are around.
The Cricklewood coffee book.
You won't get me writing a book. But all the big coffee people that you can think of, they've all probably written a book.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you write a book, you become an authority on a subject. Even if the book's a load of rubbish,
you're still an author.
Yeah, you're still an author. So. Yeah. You're still an authority figure on a subject.
Well, James will probably not be an author, but he makes a decent coffee, a nice coffee, and he has a nice shop, so it's worth coming over. Yeah, there's a nice bakery next door too.
Yeah.
So you have some fruit. An apple a day.
Yeah, we don't do food here. But you can get a bag of coffee and some filter papers.
Yeah, and you have honey, as you mentioned. You have chocolate, hot chocolate.
Yeah.
You have a few products to make a coffee also.
Yeah.
And, well, check it out, or go online. And, James, thank you for your time. And I hope your business keeps, or doors keep opening up for you in your life and in your business. Yeah.
Thanks, Omar. And good luck with your podcast.
Yes. So, thanks again. And schaltet wieder ein. Yeah. Go online again for our next episode. Probably, maybe we figure out a way to make some English ones. Yeah, maybe. I mean, we did that over the phone or over digital ways. Yeah, but the quality is obviously not the same. And also the personal connection is also nice, because it's different to have someone on the monitor than being there in person. So I really appreciated that. But I come back to London, so maybe I figure out different ways to please our English customers. Thanks again, and see you next time for our next episode when you click in for Help Me Find Good Coffee.